Broadcasting from the secret military base in Summit Township. This is On the Docket with Connor Dockery.
What do you think you are?
Weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Presented by Knutson Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store. Kettlebell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Bud Light, Bella Notte Ristorante, and Tri-County Water. That's good water.
Welcome in to On the Docket on a Wednesday hump day edition of the program. Back to a business as usual, as has been the MO as of late, with Tigers, Pistons, NBA, NHL playoffs. Also had an interview with Chuck Sprang, one of the guys behind the Al Glick tournament here in town for high school baseball and softball, the Al Glick Classic, coming up this Saturday. Going to air that interview later in the show today. Going to start off the show with the Detroit Tigers. A mess of a game last night. 10-2 loss against the New York Mets, the worst team in baseball coming into yesterday. Coming in, you already knew. Jack Flaherty getting the start. I mean, I don't even think I could play this audio anymore.
Jack Flaherty was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Like, I don't even know if I can play that anymore because, you know, last year it was like, you know, he was either terrific or he was a train wreck. But this year he's just bad. Really not much good there with Jack Flaherty, especially with his walks. Yikes. And last night was no exception. Tigers do get a leadoff single from Kevin McGonigal, and he does steal second eventually. But nothing doing there in the first besides a walk. The Mets also do nothing in the bottom of the first inning. Top of the second inning, the Tigers do get some early runs on the board, however. You have a Dylan Hits Dingers leadoff home run, 1-0 Tigers. And then a single and double from Wenzel Perez and Gage Workman, getting runners on second and third with zero outs. These are also, by the way, situations that the Tigers have extraordinarily struggled in this season. Runners in scoring position with zero outs. They've not been able to come through at the rate that they need to have success. So they have a great opportunity right here. Spencer Torkelson does get a sac fly to get the second run in. And so after the top of the second inning, it is 2-0 Tigers. But bottom of the second, the Mets do get their first run of the game, leadoff walk. Are you really surprised? And then a single, runners on first and second, a line out, and then another walk to load the bases. And then that eventually leads into a RBI ground out for Francisco Alvarez. So 2-1 Tigers after two. You have another inning, third inning, runner in scoring position, Colt Keith leadoff double. And then back-to-back strikeouts and a pop-out. I'm telling you, they just struggled. They've been struggling at the plate, coming through with early runners in scoring position. Need to have more success there. So still 2-1 Tigers, but it is going to be tied here in the third inning. Back-to-back singles. You get runners on the corners. Mark Vientos, one-run single, 2-2, and then three straight outs for Jack Flaherty getting out of the inning. Tigers retired order. In order in the top of the fourth, and then bottom of the fourth, this will see the end of Jack Flaherty's day. As after A.J. Ewing flies out, rookie, by the way, in his first major league game, you have a Francisco Alvarez double, Carson Benj single to score him, 3-2 Mets, and then after a Bo Bichette strikeout, Jack Flaherty, his pitch count getting up there, pushing 100. Can barely make it through four innings. And then Tyler Holton comes in to get the final out of that inning. So, as I mentioned, 3-2 Mets. And then Tyler Holton, again, I like him. He's one of the better relievers on the team, more consistent relievers. But top of the fifth inning, Tigers still nothing doing. I will say this was a BS play. I don't know if there, I mean, evidently not, but I think there should be some sort of like a umpire interference. I don't know if they need to do something like that, but crazy. So you have back-to-back outs, bases empty with two outs, and then you have Colt Keith with a single, and then a Riley Green single that Colt Keith, he's rounding third after a wild throw. So he's coming up to third. Wild throw goes over to the dugout, and then he turns the corner, goes home, but the umpire is in his way, and that delays him. And Colt Keith is called out at home. So that's some BS right there. Some nonsense. I mean, how is the umpire? Like, that clearly made an impact on his ability. I mean, now seeing when the throw came in, when he actually got there, is there a chance that he probably would have been thrown out anyways at home with no umpire right there? I mean, probably would have been a lot closer of a play at the very least. But the umpire in the way undoubtedly made an impact on this one. So I don't know if there's got to be a rule where, okay, you know, we're not going to score the run, but at least we're going to put him back on third, put him back on his base that he was on, you know. So that's some nonsense right there, but the Tigers still trailing 3-2, bottom of the fifth, and then the top of the sixth, both teams go down in order. And then this is when the game really starts to get out of hand. You have Birch Smith coming in for the Tigers, which he's, in my opinion so far, some mixed results with him. But he comes in relief after a great, great little stint there in relief for Tyler Holton. You have a leadoff strikeout and then back-to-back walks, a single, bases loaded with one out. And then, yikes, more Tigers fielding issues cropping up here. You have a ground out, should be a ground out to third for Bo Bichette. And then Gage Workman. One of the worst throws I've ever seen. Throws it straight into the outfield, trying to turn a double play. And instead the inning continues, two runs score on the play, and then you have another one-run ground out for Juan Soto. So the Mets plate three runs in the sixth inning, just like that. The lead grows 6-2, more unearned runs for this Tigers team, which has been a massive problem this year. Just unacceptable, unacceptable level of defense from this Tigers team. So top of the seventh, you have some traffic on the bases, another opportunity for the Tigers. You have a leadoff ground out for Spencer Torkelson, and then Hau-Yu Lee and Kevin McGonigal, couple base hits, runners on second and third with only one out. Come on, Tigers, you gotta come through. But instead, Matt Vierling and Jamai Jones get out, another opportunity wasted to get back into the game. That was really their last opportunity here, as there would be more runs to come in the seventh and eighth innings. You got a leadoff strikeout for Austin Slater, a single, a pop out, and then AJ Ewing, his first career major league hit. It's a one-run triple, another one for the Mets, and then a one-run single for Luis Torrens. So lead grows again to 8-2. Tigers again. After Dylan Dingler one-out walk, nothing there in the eighth inning. Bottom of the eighth, able to plate two more runs with Ricky Venasco in the game. And I'll get more into the pitching when I'm done recapping this game. But a couple singles, another reach on an error by Venasco. Just how? How do you make this happen as a major league pitcher? Ball comes right to him. He feels it, and then he's trying to It looks like he's trying to turn, you know, to flip it to Torkelson, but he's not even on first base to begin with. So the more logical play here is to have Vanasco himself just step on first base, but he just completely fumbles it and loses it. I mean, how is a major leaguer you making that play? That's inexcusable right there. So Juan Soto scores on the play. Eventually a bases loaded walk. Yikes. Just beyond brutal. And then you need Jake Rogers to come in. You already know what kind of game it is when you have Jake Rogers coming in to pitch. Gets the last out. Tigers a couple base runners in the ninth, but do nothing. I mean, you need a lot more than that to try to overcome an 8-run deficit in the ninth inning to pull this one out. But yeah, 10-2. This one was ugly, riddled with errors, miscues, and of course, a inability to come through at the plate when it matters most. I mean, how many guys did the Tigers get on base in this one? And especially early in innings, not able to come through. Did have a couple multi-knock games. Kevin McGonigal, of course, always spectacular. Colt Keith, Hau-Yu Lee, pinch hitting for Zach McKinstry, getting two at-bats in, two hits. Good stuff from him. Of course, the solo home run from Dylan Dingler. Otherwise, besides Tower Holton, this was the game that you just kind of get rid of all of your, most of your subpar relief pitchers on this team. A lot of holes as of right now with all these injuries with these relievers. Jack Flaherty, by the way, in his 9 games this season pitching for the Tigers, the team has only won 2 of those games. I mean, he doesn't have a win. He's 0-4 to his own record. I mean, I don't really ever bring that up. I kind of disregard, honestly, pitching win-loss for the most part. But, I mean, in general, even though it's not necessarily all on him, but it's still a pretty strong correlation. Tigers only 2-7 in games that Jack Flaherty gets the start. Not good, not acceptable, especially the rate that he walks hitters. It's bad stuff. But Burt Smith, DeJesus, Vanasco, you know, some of the worst relievers on the team, of course. Get rid of them. I should say, use them. Get them out of the way of the bullpen early in this series. So then this should hopefully set the Tigers up for some success in the next 2 games of this series as they try to get the series win. They're back at it tonight. Framber Valdez getting his first start since his suspension. It basically just delayed his start back a game. So Framber Valdez gets the start. Christian Scott getting the start for the New York Mets. Very, very raw player. Pitched in 9 games in 2024. Didn't pitch at all last year. Got 3 starts to his name this season. So we'll see if the Tigers can get through to him. But as I mentioned, you know, you use your worst starter on the team in this first game. Use up all the bad relievers. The thing was getting out of hand quickly. So now not only do you have Framber Valdez getting the start tonight, but then you can hopefully have him, A, go deeper into this game than, I don't know, barely 4 innings. And B, you have the use of some of your better relief pitchers. Hopefully the Tigers will be leading at the time that Framber Valdez leaves the game. You have a chance to at least tie the series tonight. Try to go for the series win tomorrow with Kader Montero on the mound for the Tigers. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, ugly one yesterday. And we can expect some more ugly games like that until we get some of these injured players, specifically injured pitchers, back in the fold. Because, otherwise, what more do you have on this team? It's brutal. So Tigers-Mets game 2 of the series tonight, 7:10 p.m. first pitch. We're going to have the live coverage of this one over on our sister station, WKHM, Jackson's News Talk, 970 a.m. and 101.5 FM, because we have the Pistons game this evening. Which, speaking of the Pistons, we're going to preview game five of that series at Little Caesars Arena. Going to preview that one next. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Bell & O.T. Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Kettlebell Hotspot. A well-structured kettlebell workout can burn calories at the same pace as a six-minute mile, but you know how much wear and tear your joints, especially your knees, are going through just to train up to be able to run a six-minute mile, much less actually running in a six-minute mile. It's a lot of wear and tear. You're not getting that with Kettlebell Hotspot. You're burning the same amount of calories, low-impact exercise, and you're building functional strength that actually helps you in your day-to-day life. So what are you waiting for? Join the team today. That's Kettlebell Hotspot in Spring Arbor, where your functional fitness begins. Big game right here, probably the biggest game of this series for the Pistons and Cavaliers, second round of the playoffs, tied at two. It's game five tonight. I know they always have the stats, whatever, X amount of teams. You know, this percentage of teams go on to win the series if they win game three. I know there's different points in the series. Like, I remember seeing stuff like, oh, you know, teams that go up 2-0 in series win whatever percentage of the time. You know, they always have the stats of game three. Whoever wins game three wins X amount of time. But game five, specifically game five, when it's a 2-2 series tie, you know, understandably has significant chances to win the series, because at that point you have two more tries to bring it home, with one of those at least coming on your home floor. Now, it depends, obviously, you know, what playoff format we're doing. I know, especially in the NBA Finals, we used to do the 2-3-2 format. And in the World Series in baseball, you do that as well. But in the NBA, when it's 2-2-1-1-1 with the 7-game playoff series, you know, you win game five, you take a 3-2 series lead. Then, you know, especially if you're in the Pistons case right here, you win tonight. You do have to go on the road for game six, try to pull out there, but at least you have the backstop knowing that, okay, if we don't pull it out here, at least we'll have game seven on our home floor. Whereas if you're the Cavs, you come into Little Caesars Arena, you steal a win, and then just like that, you're going back home for game six in front of your home crowd, a chance to punch your ticket and move on. So critical game. Critical juncture. The most critical juncture of all junctures. Pistons got to turn this thing around right now. And it all starts with slowing down one Donovan Mitchell, who has, he has stepped it up. Pistons in game one, doing a good job of limiting his effectiveness. 23 points, just 9 of 19 shooting. You know, the team going a little bit more with James Harden in that first game. Obviously, we know how that went. But especially in game two, not only game two, but the second half of game two, that's when he really started to step up. He put the team on his shoulders, helped the team cut into that Pistons lead, but the Pistons obviously were able to finish very strong in game two, take a 2-0 series lead. But then back in Cleveland for games three and four, phenomenal performances for him. 13 of 24, 35 points in game three, and then the second half explosion, 39 points alone in the second half, finishing 13 of 26, shooting for 43 points in game four. So it all starts with this guy for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's red hot. Pistons need to find an answer for him. whether you try to mix up your matchups, who's guarding him, or you try to throw more doubles his way. I'm curious to see what the Pistons try to do with this guy to try to slow him down. Because this guy is just, he's pretty much doing it himself. I mean, James Harden, sure he put up 24 points in the last game, but needed 5 of 14 shooting to do it. Needed the free throw line really to pad up that number. Otherwise, the big men. They're both very similar to Jalen Duren in the aspect of the two big men, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, are not really the type of big men that create their own shots. You know, they'll take the shots, the opportunities when they get set up for easy feed, easy scores right beneath the basket, wide open lanes and such. But then they're not really the types to set up their own shots. So it all starts with slowing down Donovan Mitchell. Got to find a way to get him slowing down. Second key, I would say, for the Pistons in this game tonight is Cade Cunningham needs to have a much better performance. First game of the playoffs, in game 4, that he was held to less than 20 points, finished with just 19. In game 4, 7 of 16 shooting, that's got to be much better. And 5 turnovers with only 6 assists. So Cade Cunningham needs to step up, needs to have another phenomenal performance tonight. And the Pistons, it's been kind of a problem in the playoffs, but they need to have a consistent second guy. I mean, they have had Tobias Harris, who is a walking 20-point machine in the playoffs, but I like Tobias Harris being the third guy, not necessarily the second guy or even the first guy, getting your shots, providing that scoring punch. I like him as the number 3 option. Now, all season, it was Jalen Duren. This guy was a machine, but obviously this guy, in an offensive sense, has really shrunk down in the playoffs for whatever reason. He's not shooting as much, not getting as many opportunities. You did get a big 24 spot off the bench from Caris LeVert. That was a bit unexpected. And the third key here for the Pistons, more of an individual player basis, you got to find more minutes for Paul Reed. This guy is making way too big of an impact off the bench to not play him. You have to find time for this guy. And this guy is just a minute-by-minute production off the charts. He's been spectacular. He only appeared in 3 games of the Orlando Magic series, but he's appeared in the last 2 games of this series, and both games he's been great in that limited aspect. 9 minutes in game 3, 11 points, 4 of 4 shooting, 3 rebounds. And then in game 4, 14 minutes, he produced 15 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 7 of 9 shooting, and a steal. I mean, you can't keep this guy off the floor. I would like to see him get a bump up to at least 20 minutes. You might have to sacrifice Isaiah Stewart in this fold. I'm okay with that. As much as I like beef stew, what Paul Reed is doing right now, invaluable in providing that depth contribution in the playoffs. So Paul Reed getting a bump up, I would like to see the Pistons do that in the game tonight. And otherwise, I think the Pistons need to get back to trying to force some of those turnovers. I know a lot of those turnovers forced in the first few games of the series. I mean, I say the word forced. A lot of those turnovers by the Cavs in those first few games were due to their own sloppiness. I think the Pistons need to They excel when they win the turnover battle. They're getting a lot of easy, fast break opportunities, those points off turnovers. It seems like whoever wins that battle is winning these games. As I mentioned, I figured the Cavs would be trying to clean that up. They did definitely in game 4. Pistons got to get those turnovers, got to get out and running. Got to get those easy scores. I think those are pretty much the four solid keys that will win game five tonight for the Pistons. Get you back on the road, up 3-2. You got it. You've had some pretty good chances. I mean, not as much in game four. If you were able to play in the second half the way you played in the first half, good chance the Pistons are walking out of there with a 3-1 lead, but they had their chances in game three as well before they faltered in the down the stretch and such. But, yeah, limit Donovan Mitchell. Cade Cunningham has got to have a great performance tonight. Find the time for Paul Reed. And win the turnover battle. Those are my four keys for the game tonight. Pistons and Cavs. Game 5. Tip-off is at 8 o'clock right here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. And, yeah, this is a big one. I had the Pistons in 6 coming into this series. I think it's definitely doable. The Cavs, even when they look their best in this series, they don't look anywhere near unbeatable. It's been pretty much just one guy. You slow down that guy, then I think this Cavs team looks way more mortal than they otherwise were. So it should be a fun one tonight. Game 5, 8 o'clock here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. I mentioned earlier that I had a conversation this week with Chuck Sprang behind the Al Glick Classic baseball and softball tournament coming up this weekend. We're going to air that interview on the other side. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bono Team Restaurante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Pauly's Country Markets. Sign up for Mart Market Rewards online at country-markets.com and save even more in-store today. Also, get the weekly deals sent directly to your email inbox. That's country-markets.com for Pauly's Country Markets. See one of the convenient locations around Jackson County today. Without further ado, here's the interview I recorded earlier this week with Chuck Sprang, speaking about the Al Glick Classic baseball and softball tournament coming up on Saturday. This Saturday, it is the annual Al Glick Classic baseball and softball tournament. Several teams making the trip to Jackson to play in two and, in some cases, three games for the championship. And joining me to talk about this tournament on the telephone is Chuck Sprang. Chuck, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing well. And so the Al Glick Classic, long-running baseball softball tournament here in Jackson. How many years exactly has it been going on?
Well, the Al Glick Classic is actually an extension of the old Sit Pat Diamond Classic. Chuck Walters and I took over the Diamond Classic back in 2011. The Sit Pat at that point decided they weren't going to put the tournament on anymore, and Chuck and I decided we'd take it over, and we've been kind of managing it and supervising it since 2011.
So of the Al Glick sense, this is essentially the 15th year?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
All right. So this year, obviously, we've got eight different baseball and eight different softball teams. Of course, several local teams. We've got for the baseball side, we've got Jackson, Lumen Christi, Concord, Columbia Central in there. And, of course, a couple of teams in the neighboring counties as well. You know, Onstead, Reading, Jonesville, and Quincy as well. And then on the softball side as well, we got Jackson, Jonesville, Columbia, Quincy, Concord, Lumen, and Reading and Onstead as well. So is it like an invitational basis? Do teams have to request to get into this tournament? How does that work?
Well, we send out an invitation, and as many schools as respond. Years past, we've had as many as 24 teams involved in the tournament. So things kind of fluctuate from year to year. The weather has a lot to do with it. We just found out yesterday Lumen Christi's softball team is not going to be able to play this year. They, as you know, they're in that Catholic League now. They won their game last night. They will play for the Catholic League championship on Saturday. So we're presently we're looking for a team to replace Lumen on the softball side.
Oh, okay. And in the event that a team can't come in, would I would imagine would Concord just guess basically get a bye?
Well, that's the way it would work. There's a couple of different scenarios that could play out. The worst case scenario that we have is that we would invite a JV team to come in and play if we can't find another team. Part of the problem that we run into, Grass Lake is hosting a pretty good sized tournament this weekend. Bronson's also hosting a tournament. So there's a limited number of teams actually that, that we're going to be able to get lined up, but, we're hopeful that we'll get that eighth team and, we won't have to go to plan B.
Yeah. Hopefully a team is able to come in and fill that. And, hypothetically, I mean, it doesn't even necessarily mean for this year, but any other given year, if there is any other weather, what happens with the tournament? Do we play as much as we can? Do we reschedule?
We don't reschedule because it's actually the weekend before Memorial Day, which starts the district tournament, for these teams. We did have one year, and I don't remember the exact year. We had one year where we had to actually rain it out. And with Jackson High having artificial turf, there were four teams that got together and went down there and they put on their own tournament. We've worked our way through the weather over the years, and we've only had that one year where we had wipe it out.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, obviously, for that year. But that term, obviously, last year it was kind of like misty, maybe very light drizzle, but nothing that caused any delays or anything like that. We were able to get every single game in last year.
Yeah.
So looks like we got a 9:30 start for the baseball side and then a 10 o'clock start on the softball side. Go ahead and talk about with some of the different rules and such in place to get these games on track.
Well, we play basically by the MHSAA guidelines. We play the mercy rules, courtesy runners. We kind of tweak the tie. If we have a game that's tied after seven innings, we use the Major League Baseball tiebreaker rule where we put a runner at second base with nobody out. And we do that in the start of the eighth inning. The National Federation or the MHSAA rule says you do that in the 11th inning, and high school baseball does not have a tiebreaker rule at all. They just keep playing until somebody wins.
So old school, basically.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then the championship game scheduled for 3:30. It looks like at both locations, Jackson High School for the baseball game and the Parkside Middle School for the softball game. Correct?
Yeah, we'll go at as close to 3 o'clock as we can at Parkside, and then we'll go 3:30. For the high school, that gives the teams that are coming from another site, an opportunity to, you know, maybe get, hydrated a little bit, and we give them an, a short period of time to warm up. Some of these teams have never played on artificial turf, so that makes a difference for them.
Yeah, and especially Jackson, they have very nice facilities over there, so definitely a good spot to host some of these games, and of course hosting the championship games as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this year's tournament. Lots of really talented teams on both the baseball and the softball sides of this. Of course, it's unfortunate that we won't be getting a Lumen Christi softball in the tournament, because they've got a really good team this year as
yes,
well.
Yes, they do. Yep.
So, yeah, again, this is it's all going to start at 9:30 for the baseball side, 10 o'clock for the softball side, and teams will, you know, move locations accordingly based on if they win, lose, or what have you. Is there any other thoughts, any other things that we need to know about this tournament, Chuck?
Saturday, May 16th, is Armed Forces Day. We're going to invite any veteran that attends. We want them to come down on the field for the playing of the national anthem so that they can be honored. We don't care what era they're from. If you're a veteran and you served in the military, then we would invite you to come down on the field prior to the game, and we want to honor all the veterans that we can. A short note, Randy Glick and his family will be at Jackson High for the first pitch ceremony at 9:30, and Randy and his family will then travel over to Parkside and we'll have a first pitch ceremony on the two diamonds at Parkside there as well.
Well, excellent. I'm looking forward to that. Good way to honor our veterans. Obviously, a good way to thank you for your service before each of these games. So that's going to be something to look forward to. Well, Chuck, I think it's going to be a pretty good tournament this year for both the baseball side and the softball side, and I thank you for speaking on it today.
Okay. Pleasure talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Once again, that was Chuck Spring speaking about the Al Glick Classic baseball and softball tournament going down this Saturday, May 16th, and we'll be broadcasting all three of the games at Jackson High School. We'll be broadcasting all three of those over on our sister station, WKHM, Jackson's News Talk, 970 AM and 101.5 FM, with the first pitch of Game 1 scheduled for 9:30.
So there you go. Really enjoyed that interview. We're going to wrap up the show on the other side, chatting some NBA, NHL, all that fun stuff around the wide world of sports. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bono T. Ristorante, Bud Light, and Tri-County Water. So wrapping up the show today, got some NBA news, tragic news. You don't see this very often, but we actually had not one, but two NBA deaths yesterday. First up, we had Grizzlies forward Brandon Clark dead at 29. Apparently first responders found a drug paraphernalia at the scene in the home. That's all they're saying right now. So a very tragic right there. Young player with the Grizzlies. First round pick in 2019, I believe. So, unfortunate news right there. And then we got the news later yesterday that former NBA player Jason Collins, dead at 47 of a brain tumor, who played 13 years in the NBA. Of course, notable for being the first ever openly gay NBA player. Came out towards the end of his career. But, tragic news in the NBA yesterday. So, very unfortunate stuff. Game last night, Spurs-Timberwolves. Spurs, specifically Victor Wembanyama, on a mission. 126-97. The Spurs taking down the Timberwolves in Game 5, taking a 3-2 series lead. Wembanyama, of course, was ejected in game four for an elbow. Didn't have any additional suspension time associated with that. But, yeah, he came out swinging. He was not messing around. Came out with a big first quarter. Finished with 27 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks on 9 of 16 shooting. You had 6 different Spurs finishing in double-digit scoring. And obviously, 1 in a blowout. So the Spurs lead the series 3-2. Game 6 of that series will be on Friday. So no game at all tomorrow in the NBA playoffs. So game 6 will be Friday for Spurs Timberwolves, as will be the case for Pistons Cavs game 6. Series tied at 2, so the series is going at least 6 games. So Pistons Cavs game 6 also on Friday. As we already know, game 5 is tonight. It's a big one. Pistons got to get this win. Other news in the NBA. Daryl Morey. He's been canned. He's been shown the door by the Philadelphia 76ers, president of basketball operations. Of course, he was most known for his time with the Houston Rockets. He was one of the original ones in the NBA that went all in on analytics. He's actually a big reason why the NBA is so three-point heavy these days. You know, a lot of people think that it's because of those Golden State Warriors teams of 10 years ago with, you know, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and then later on Kevin Durant. Very three-point heavy shooting teams ahead of their time in that aspect. But I would say they probably played a pretty big role in that, but another significant role player in that that whole three-point revolution, if you will, in the NBA was Daryl Morey during his time with the Houston Rockets. You know, really, really went all in on three-point shooting based because, you know, basketball, the analytics, the math, says that your most efficient shots are layups, free throws, and three-pointers, especially corner three-pointers. So as a result, the team went all in on three-point shooting. You see how well that worked out for them? I mean, they made at least one conference final. I think they made it maybe 2 conference finals in there with James Harden. But anyways, after he was done in Houston, he got picked up in Philadelphia to continue the process. You know, their whole tanking development strategy that eventually netted them Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. Had a lot of not only high lottery picks, but a number one picks, especially in that. And obviously you see where that's got them. Funny enough, their best draft pick in the last several years has come later in the first round, and that's Tyrese Maxey. Not even a lottery pick. So he is out with Philadelphia after their embarrassing second-round sweep exit at the hands of the New York Knicks. So they're done. So we'll see what direction the Sixers go in. It looks like their head coach, Nick Nurse, is staying on. So we'll see. But, yeah, good riddance to Daryl Morey. 2 failed experiments, we'll say. And the Sixers had their chances, but have not even ever made a conference final before. In that run, I should say. In this process run. They've had a lot of disappointing playoff exits. They've lost in a couple of game sevens. Notably the heartbreaking Kawhi Leonard game winner. 2019, the year that the Raptors won the NBA championship. Their lone season with Kawhi Leonard. They beat the Sixers in Game 7 of the second round. And then a few years ago, I think 2023 or 2024, one of those seasons, the Sixers lost in 7 games to the Boston Celtics. Also in the second round, obviously this year they get swept in the second round. So, yeah, you got to move on at some point. So he is out. Other news in the NBA. It looks like the Milwaukee Bucks officially open to trade offers for their superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo. Which, hey, Nuggets, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Go all in for this guy. I've said it before. I think the Bucks are probably going to trade this guy this offseason. I mean, that's an organization that you totally have to blow up and start over. It's just not working. It's unfortunate, as a matter of fact, for them. I mean, you think that, hey, you know, you got Giannis, you win a championship 2021, this team's on top. And it looks like they're going to be a juggernaut for a few years. But then they had some disappointing early playoff exits, had a couple of moves out of desperation, and look at where they're at now. Yikes. I really hope my Denver Nuggets don't follow the same path. Back to the world of NHL. A couple games last night. 3-2 scores for both games. First up for the Buffalo Sabres on the road. Facing a 3-1 deficit, they instead get the road win. Series is tied at 2. Series shifts back to Buffalo with home ice advantage. Trailed 2-1 in that one. Goal in the second. Big power play goal in the third to get them the lead and the win. So Buffalo Sabres 2-2 with Game 5 coming up tomorrow. And then also winning 3-2, Vegas Golden Knights, 3-2 overtime win over the Anaheim Ducks. So the Golden Knights, that was their Game 5, so they take a 3-2 series lead. And they will be playing in Game 6 tomorrow night. They have a chance to move on. Winner of that series will take on the winner of the Avs Wild Series, which, speaking of that Game 5, is tonight with the Avs at home, up 3-1. They have a chance to move on, punch their ticket to the Western Conference Finals. Again, I believe first time since they won the Stanley Cup in 2022. So we'll watch that space. That'll do it for the show today. Again, a couple games we'll be broadcasting. Tigers-Mets, 7:10. That'll be over on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk, 970 AM and 101.5 FM. And then Cavs-Pistons, Game 5. Little Caesars Arena tonight. Big game. Pistons, go get her done. Live coverage will be at 8 o'clock right here on Jackson's Fox Sports, 101.9 FM. We'll break it down tomorrow. Peace.
If you missed today's installment of On the Docket, podcast it at foxsports1019.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to tune in live weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.